Today is the 27th of September 2016. I'm interviewing Chaz and Ida Anderton. So we'd like you to now tell me something about the life and times of your family, Chaz.
Yes, very good. My grandfather, named Charles also, came from Prescott in England out to the Auckland area with his brother, the brother remaining in Auckland, and grandfather Charles came to Hawke's Bay and took up work with Archdeacon Williams on the virtually close to the Te Ariki, what was then the Te Ariki Swamp. He had several children, nine in actual fact. He contracted pleurisy, I understand, and he died. He had previously had a fairly important job in managing the workers on Te Ariki Station. Anyway, with all the children at home, of course, grandmother was in wit's end, and there were the three older boys. They hadn't really finished school, but they left school and went out to work and sent their wages home to help care for the younger ones, clothe and school them, of course. My father's name was Arthur, and in the early part of his life, he was a bullocky. He almost lived with bullocks. And the swamp, this is down in from Pukeho, was more or less a lake at that stage. And the archdeacon actually put in what they called the breakwater on the river. This is out Tamima Road, and blocked the river from flowing down and filling up that area. And so gradually, by putting in the big main drain of the ground, mostly peat, of course, gradually dried out. But there were many times when bullocks would just go that extra step too far to pick up a nice lush piece of grass, and then they would become bogged, and it would be Dad's job with the working bullocks, of course, to back in and hitch on to the bullocks and drag them out. If they'd been there a wee while, it's common of cattle to charge. And so Dad always had a few Maoris with him to give a hand, because wages were pretty low in those days, and they always had plenty of hands. And he mentioned one time when he had four Maoris with him, and out some distance there was a willow tree that had partly fallen down but was still on the slope. And anyway, these Maoris, so afraid this beast was going to charge them, would, as soon as the beast would make any sort of a lurch after he'd been hitched on, they would bolt for this willow that I'm talking about, and they wouldn't look back until they were up there in what might be called safety, and look back and the bullock was still in the bog, of course. Anyway, from there, still with bullocks, he took a job at the Anaroa mill, and there his job was to, with the wagon and the bullocks, to bring the timber down to what was originally the Pukeho railway station. It no longer exists, but There was always a siding there, and we would unload the timber onto the wagon and then go back, and that, of course, was a day's work. From Anaroa, he went on to Kiriru Mill, and there was logging, as they called it. The bushmen would fall the trees and prepare the logs, and with the bullocks, Dad would hitch on and drag the logs in and out round the stumps, of course, out to an area that they called the skids, where there was a clear going from there to the mill. So the hauler had a great long wire rope which they'd hitch on to the logs and drag them in to the mill. At this stage, the early stage, Dad was still single but married at Kiriru. And then, of course, the great boom was to get on the land, and he left his job eventually at Kiriru and came to Drumpeel Corner, Otani, when I was 3 years old. And at that stage, mother was pregnant with the next child and went into the home, but unfortunately she didn't ever come out of the home, and the baby was then reared by our uncle and aunt, who were at Pukio Kahu, Taihape.
Mention Elsie and Dick.
They also had another baby much the same age, so Hector and the other boy, whose name was Gordon, were reared more or less as twins. I was then the youngest, of course, of the family. There were two older, Dick or Richard, and then sister Elsie, the only girl in the family. And in later years, after several housekeepers of various quality, of course, Elsie actually took over the house and looked after us until, of course, she married, and eventually I grew up sufficiently to go out to work, which I did. And I was always crazy about dogs because I'd always reared pups at home for various managers and head shepherds that couldn't be bothered rearing pups, and I'd usually have them fairly well trained by the time they'd picked them up at about 10 months or a year old. Anyway, I went out to, as I said, went out to work and couldn't get onto the dogs quickly enough, and worked for various ones. Went way up to Putorino at one stage and worked for an old single gentleman up there. And then eventually came back to near Hastings. And then I found my wife there. So we were married just before I went overseas, actually. And unknown to us, of course, my wife was already pregnant. So the first baby was born when I'd been overseas some months, and he was about 16 months old by the time I got back again. I spent over 2 years in the army here. It was impossible to get away overseas. The Jap scare, of course, was a real one at that stage, and we were held here to hopefully defend the country. Anyway, eventually I got away only because some of the furlough boys hadn't returned, and we got back in their place and went overseas. The North African campaign at that stage had closed, but I was held back in Mardi camp for some 4 or 5 months. on administration and eventually got away to Italy and arrived at the latter part of the Cassino campaign. Maybe I was fortunate that I hadn't gone earlier, because that was a shocking battle, actually. From then on, of course, we went on through the Sora show and Rimini, lost the odd tank here and there, but anyway, eventually, when we got up to a place called Cesenatica, they wanted drivers from the armored units to drive vehicles for this newly formed assault squadron. And it sounded fairly exciting to me, so several of us transferred. And there I was in charge of a Sherman tank with a big bulldozer blade on the front. And the job there was to make crossings, particularly in the Po Valley. The Po Valley, of course, in Italy had been a swamp at one stage, and there were many canals with high stop banks. And as Jerry pulled back, of course, he always blew the bridges, so it was my job to go ahead of the armor, in fact, ahead of all the units, and make a crossing. First of all, push in the stop bank on my side. Then we had fascine carriers, bridge builders, Churchill arcs, and so on, and one or other, as was required, would go forward, drop into the canal. I would then go across on them and push out the stop bank so that the units could get through and stand by for about 5 minutes, and they'd want another crossing because there were just so many canals in the Po Valley. Eventually, we managed to get right through to, or incidentally, the Po River. I was transferred on a sort of motorized pontoon affair. I had to be across there to make crossings. Anyway, we moved on and eventually completed the campaign up in Trieste. And up there, of course, the Triestinians wouldn't surrender to the Yugoslavs, who were really there a day ahead of us. They waited until we got through to surrender to the New Zealand forces. And then, of course, there was a battle almost between Yugoslav forces and ours. And it was nothing to have fully armored contingents heading off down. And if they sent a patrol down, we would very often follow it. We're fully armed, so thank goodness nobody fired a shot, otherwise the place would have just exploded, I'm sure. We were sitting up with our tanks on a high spot, and we had our tank guns lined up on one or other of Tito's headquarters. Now, do you want me to go any further?
Well, at this stage, I think if we can stop, I'll just ask you, did you play any sports at all when you were at school and as a young man? Did you play rugby or anything like that?
Yes, moderately. I was never a terribly keen sportsman, but we played cricket and football, as it was then, of course. Oh, yes.
Well, the other question is, what unit were you in the army? Were you in armoured or...?
Yes, 20th Armoured Regiment. And when the assault squadron, as they called it, this other unit that I mentioned that I transferred to, was formed, that was called the 28th Assault Squadron. Assault was more assaulting obstacles in our way rather than assaulting the enemy.
Okay, well, at this stage then I'll ask Isa if she could tell us about where your people came from.
Well, my mother's family came from England in 1840, and they arrived at Petone, which was the port in those days for Wellington. And when the earthquake came, about 18 months after that, they moved to Littleton.
Yes.
And that's where my grandmother came from. My father came from Scotland, and he arrived in New Zealand in the late 1800s. I'm not too clear on the date. And he went to Australia, and then he came on to New Zealand, to the South Island. And from there he moved up to Hastings, where he met my mother, because prior to that, Granny had married Jim West, and the family were living in Hastings.
So what was your family name then?
Well, that was, my father's name was John Edward, so that was my Christian name. John Edward was my father, yes.
Singular, no S.
No, no S. I was born in Hastings at Longlands, and I went to Central School when I was five, and that was round about the time that we had the 31 earthquake. My father was actually contracting. He had horses and machinery, and he was working around Hastings. Of course, we had the slump then, and he wasn't able to get work. So we up stakes as a family and went, and he took a job out beyond Craggy Range, and we were there when the earthquake in 31.
Do you know whose farm that was?
Yes, that was Van Asher's. The house was badly damaged in the earthquake, and we never ever went back to live in it. So we moved back to Hastings, and Dad set up again with horses and machinery.
Yes.
And one place that we lived was in Willow Park Road, which is now the boys' high school playground.
Yes.
The house backed onto the playground, and that's where we had the horse. Things didn't pick up very well, and he sold up there, and he took a job once again out in the country at Raukawa. I did 2 years from standard 3 and 4 in Central School in Hastings.
Yes.
And then the 5 and 6 I did at the Raukawa School. I did a couple of years of correspondence high school from home, and I then went and did a little bit of housework, and at that stage the war had started, and I would have been in one of the first groups to be called up. So I joined the Air Force, and that was when just before I left for the Air Force was when I met Charlie, because he was shepherding on Raukawa.
Whose station was that?
That was Harding's, Robert.
Yes.
Harding.
Yes.
So I went into the Air Force, and I did 2.5-3 years there. And we got married in 1943, June 1943. And between then and when Charlie left for overseas in January, he had 6 final leaves. Every time I saw him, he was on final leave. Yes.
Oh, that's a good story, though.
And
yes.
When he did leave, he threw a letter out of the train at Palmerston North, and somebody posted it to me to let me know that he had gone. He had no sooner gone than I realised I was pregnant. And I left the Air Force in March and went home to live with my parents Ross was born.
You mentioned Longlands initially. Whereabouts at Longlands did you live?
You know, on the main road going towards Hastings from Puckypuck, from south, there's a dip in the road. Yeah. We were on the first house on the right, just across the railway line.
Because the Cassiopolis,
they lived opposite.
Over the railway line.
Yeah.
And the Spears further down. Because with the Spears at they went to Central about the time you would have been there.
Probably. The Maxwells were further along the road.
Ian Maxwell, the youngest, he's probably only about 75, 80 now. Hugh I knew much better, he was older. So you're a real Hastings girl, you couldn't get away from Hastings, could you?
Back and forward.
Yes. So anyway, so at that point you had your baby and you were with your mother and father and you were awaiting, I guess, the end of the war.
Yes, when Charlie came back, we went to his father's property at Otani and we lived there till...
Glenville Corner.
Right. Yes, we lived there till 1960. Bought two other places to increase our... And then we went out to Farm Road, yes.
All right, Chaz, the ball's back in your court.
Didn't mention I was awarded a military medal for my work on the last operation going ahead of the armour and making these crossings and so on, because I really had no protection. I was out in no man's land. Yes. So, what further do you suggest?
Well, go on from when you came back.
It's a long story.
Well, that's what we're here for.
No, it's not that long, actually. Yes, well, when I returned, I continued on with Dad's permission. He was still alive at that stage, on Drumhill Corner. And, of course, I had much bigger ideas than 26-odd acres.
Yes.
So while I was away, a chap called Burchett had the property leased, and Dad wasn't very happy with him. I don't know what happened, whether he was told to move on or what, but my brother Dick carried on with the property, and he was even worse. He cut down a lot of the fruit trees that Dad thought so much of, you know. I can always remember what... And Dick told me this. I thought it was a great joke. He used to drive the bulldozer caterpillar for Burchett's, and he set it heading towards the gateway, and it hopped off and he was going to open the gate, you know, ahead of the tractor, but it got there first. So, of course, it just crawled up the gate and crashed the gate down. Dick didn't seem to have any sense of value or whatever, you know. But that sort of thing costs money to replace. Anyway, now getting back, the dad let me here have the place to work. And I dare say he sort of kept an eye on me for a while. And he could see that I was a bit of a tiger to work. And eventually sold the place to me. I milked cows there with a little bucket plant. And there was over a mile of lane there, right down. It continued down to Brian Williams and on to Drumpeel. David Williams, as it was in those days, incidentally, the cattle stock blocked the road just a little ahead of that. but there was over a mile of road, and some days I used to just turn the cows out and they'd wander off down the road and they'd keep the road in order. And it was only due to that, of course, that I could run a few extra. We used to have herd testing on those days. It usually used to be a lady. She'd come round with the gear. She would weigh up the milk from each individual cow, of course, in the evening, and stayed with us overnight, of course, and then weigh up the mornings and take a sample from each, and then test it, of course, for butterfat. And I managed by careful selection and so on. Well, first of all, there was a herd testing group, you know, around about 26 herds, I think. And in the end, I topped the herd, which was quite a boost when it came to selling out. But the cows weren't enough to keep me busy. But Molly Nestabalus had about 300 acres across the road, across the Drumpeel Road, and I'd worked for her previously in my young days, and she gave me a job for, I used to do something like 6 hours there for Molly, and milk cows night and morning as well, made quite a long day. I can remember when the children were going to school, I barely ever saw them because I was up at 4:30, 4:45 in the morning, out to milk. And during this period, Isa would get the children up and away to school. And in the evening, I was still working, milking cows and what have you, when she would feed them and get them to bed at night. So I barely ever saw them. And at any rate, that place was, I was rearing to get a bit more land. There was a block of 60-odd acres belonged to Rosslyn Todd next door. And I asked him, first of all, if I could buy it. And he said no, he didn't want to sell. But I then contacted the Minister of Labour, and he put pressure on Rosslyn, and in the end, Rosslyn was rather keen to sell me the block. At that stage, I sort of thought, well, I can manage with sheep now. And I was rearing, as I told you, to get back to dogs, of course. And I think it was probably at that stage that I had the clearance sale of the dairy stock. They sold rather well because, as I mentioned, they had topped the herd testing group. And then I managed to buy another 100 acres up towards Waipawa and carried on then with the two blocks. It was quite a problem, really, because I had to move stock up and down the main road. Fortunately, there weren't anywhere near the traffic there is today. And when I did want to bring the stock through, I used to start off at daybreak on a Sunday morning, and I could get a little bit of peace that way. Anyway, eventually, as I said, I wanted to get a bit bigger. And this place out of Carline, as we call it, became available. And so the farmers, Hawke's Bay farmers, helped me to move in there to sell what I already had. The chap next door, Wally Malcolm, bought the 100 acres, and then the other block was sold to another chap. What was his name, do you remember? Doesn't matter anyway.
He came from Fielding, but I can't remember his
name. No, never mind. And so we moved out to
Farm Road.
That was 1123 acres.
1123.
Yes.
It was a decent sized farm.
So slightly larger, of course. Sheep and cattle, of course. But I Kaiser always said, if you'd seen the house, there'd be no... I never bought the place.
Anyway, a bit of deferred maintenance, did it?
He wasn't worried about the house, he wanted the land.
Yes, the land was all right, but the house, they had a manager in it, and it belonged to, that farm belonged to, again, Dennis Hamilton, and he had a manager on it. But the house was fairly high off the ground, but the water used to flow in underneath, and rats, you never saw so many rats in all your life.
Were you near the lake?
No, we weren't.
And you had water running on the hill?
No, it just lay there.
Oh,
it was that type of country, yes. Yeah.
The house was... Everything went mouldy in it, you know.
Yes.
Oh.
Damn.
We were close to quite a steep cliff, actually, down to a creek, and the rats used to bore into that bank, and I suppose they thought the house was probably even more comfortable than the bank. Anyhow, they had holes they could go through into the lining and up, of course, over the top of the ceiling, and at night you'd hear them bouncing backward and forward over the ceiling joist. Oh, my golly, man.
Yeah, you stayed.
You stayed.
Yeah.
I suppose she had no alternative. But anyway, gradually we had a chap, a good carpenter. Have you got his name?
Fred Marsh,
that's right. And he did a third of the upgrading.
He actually wrecked the whole house, but all we had was the structure, and it was very solid. And in three parts, he rebuilt for us. We had a lovely home in the finish.
At three different times, of course, and we were fortunate that we could do it all out of revenue. We didn't have to borrow. And in the finish, it was a really, really nice house for God forbid all the rats and so on.
You never shared the new house with the rats. How did you get rid of the rats? Poison?
Yes. We had poison made all the time.
They had no sense of, you know, attempting to get rid of them. Out in the shed, there was a bag, a small bag, that had dog nuts in it. Well, you can just imagine. It was great tucker for the rats. They used to climb up there and have a good old feed. Anyway, it turned out to be a nice house eventually. And we did a lot of hard work there. In the off-season, we either renewed or put up new fences.
Can I just stop you there? We had a cottage on the place that was only a few years old. So we had a married man in the cottage, and he worked for Charlie.
Yes. Oh, yes.
So did you have a big garden around your house?
It was fairly big.
Yes.
Were you both gardeners, or...?
I did most of it. Charlie didn't have the time to do much, but I did most of it.
And so while the house was being renovated and the farm was getting better, how many children did you have?
Three.
All boys?
Two boys and a girl.
But are they still local?
Judy's the only one, and she's in Bayview. Neil is in London. He lives in London. He was an electrical engineer, had a very responsible job. And the other one took up medicine, and he was a doctor, a specialist.
So they all did very well.
But they both retired now.
We were very lucky. All three kids went through varsity and, you know.
And so grandchildren, there must be several of those.
We had five grandchildren. Judy lost the boy, and we had three girls and one boy in London, and two girls in Canada, and Judy had one girl here.
Well, we said the Andertons are fairly poor breeders. We haven't got a lot of young folk coming on, really. As I said, Neil only has one, and Judy only has one now, and Ross two.
So over those period of farming, you've noticed a lot of changes. The carriers that used to cart stock for you.
Yes.
They had quite different trucks then to today. Yep. Who used to cart your stock those days?
Cassidy's,
yes.
See, it's almost a forgotten name now, isn't it?
Yes, almost. Oh, yes.
Didn't we have George Winlap to begin with?
Yeah, I think we might have originally, yes. While we were there, there were no sheepyards down handy, and also there was no wool shed. We had to shear our sheep next door, so we put up a wool shed, wool away, if I can remember rightly, wool shed, and built a set of sheepyards not too far away.
And cattle yards.
And a dip, of course, and also cattle yards with a loading ramp so we could do our cattle work there too.
We got it all set up and then we sold it.
But this is a story of life, isn't it? You look at it and think, we worked all those years, but then you've got to say, well, now here you are. But you moved somewhere else before you came here. So you had, this is your second move from the farm. And that's why we work. There's supposed to be a reward at the end of it.
Don't forget, we went out there paying $46,000 and sold out for how much?
$750,000 That was just the farm.
$500,000.
No, more than $500,000.
Yes, three quarters. Yes, you need a wheelbarrow full of money to go and buy a bottle of milk today.
Yeah, this is right. Oh, yes.
And so did you do any travelling at all?
Oh, yes.
Every year we did.
Favourite place of going to? Where was your favourite place? All of them.
All of them. I was just saying the other day, one place that I really thought was worth travelling through was Russia. It was one of the very interesting countries. But no, we did see the two boys, one in England and one in Canada.
Yes.
We'd see one or the other or both. So every time we went.
Where in Canada did your son live?
In Kelowna, British Columbia.
I know, I've been there. My son used to work in Calgary.
He
married a Canadian girl.
Yes, right.
And he got married up on the Bugaboo Mountains. Not far from Kelowna. Beautiful country. Do you know, we have a beautiful country in New Zealand.
Yes.
But this goes on and on and on through the week. We drove from Vancouver down and up the Okanagan Valley.
It was
the most exciting.
That house. And that painting was one of the first houses built in Kelowna.
Was it really?
And Charlie will tell you the size of the beams that were there.
Oh, yes. The floor joists. They're 14 by 2.
Were they? They had big trees.
Yeah.
They were probably redwood.
Yes. Yeah, I think they were. Yes. Oh, my goodness.
A fellow painted that. Ross had a few sheep there. We heard of the sheep round and he took a photo of it. And then he painted it.
Does he still live over in Canada?
Yes.
He retired there?
Yes.
Is he the doctor?
Yes. And he's also got Parkinson's.
They've just built a new big house.
Yes, they've just built a new house. Yeah. Yes. Right down near the lake.
Near one of the daughters.
It's a country of contrasts, isn't it?
Yes. But
when it's cold, it's very, very cold.
That's true.
When it's hot, it's hot.
When it's hot, by gosh, it can be hot. The water in the pool was never below about 80 degrees when we were there at one stage. Of course, we never went there in the winter.
Can we get back to the story? I'd like to say a little bit now.
Okay.
Before we left Otani, I took up golf, but only in Waipawa, at a course that was only just sort of about 9 holes. So when we moved to Waipak, I decided I wanted to join Waipak Golf Course. And I played there for 50 years. And over that time, I had a school bus run to do. I had to take the children to school and worked it in with my golf. Went all over the place playing golf. Even out of, I played Taupo and Auckland and up the King Country.
Fielding.
Palmerston North, Fielding, all over. Won a few trophies here and there and really enjoyed my years of playing golf. I also did a lot of sewing. I made all the kids' clothes and made my daughter's wedding frock. And a girl that was teaching at the local school, I made her wedding frock. And I was a member of the women's division, the Red Cross, and the Plunket over those years. So,
did you belong to any organisations, Chaz?
Yeah.
Well, not a great lot except for dog trial.
Lions, come on, Lions, school committees.
Yes. But I was pretty active in the dog trial world, of course, I've only won one New Zealand championship, but I've had many places. I think it was a colour number. I've got something like 32 places in championships, New Zealand championships, you know. At Coomeraw one year, I won all 4 events. The 2 heads, you know, short head and the long head, and the both hunts, zigzag and straight, with 4 different dogs. And I'd left the best dog at home. I only took the other one for a trial, and blow me Joe, he won. And not only that, in the hunts, I won open, intermediate, and maiden in both hunts. First and second in the short head, and I won the long head.
It's never been done since, before or since.
Let's say you were both very active.
Yeah. Oh, yes.
I had some good dogs.
Major fun, didn't you?
Yeah.
That's right. At Carline, I had one called Dick Black Dog. And I could send him any distance to pull up a cast sheep, and he would do his damnedest to get them on their feet. And as soon as ever they got on their feet, he'd stand and watch them for fear they fell over again.
Is that right?
Yeah. Dick, yes.
Yes, some dogs could pretty well think for themselves.
If
you see a proper heading dog leading stock, they, you know, especially on roads, that they knew exactly what to do.
Yes. Dick won the South Island long head one year, and he was second another year. So he was no mug, you know, a black dog. No, I was just fortunate that I got into good strains, both with the Hunterways and the heading. They were good strains. You had no trouble. You just had to rear them and they were there.
Natural instinct.
Yes. Natural, outstanding capability. And, you know, they look at you, we're intelligent, you know. They can pick up almost what you're saying. They're really good dogs.
So when you left Farm Road, you moved into Waipak?
No, we bought Munga Territory Station with our son-in-law.
Yes.
But you didn't live there, did you?
Yes.
Oh,
yes.
You did? Yes.
Well, for 23 years.
Okay. And it was from there you moved
Waipak.
Yes.
When we bought the property, it was actually in our son-in-law's family. There were 16 shareholders of them.
Yeah.
Some of them want their money out, so they decided to sell it. What was the acreage there? The
2524.
So what Hector's was the family name?
MacDonald. And anyway, we decided that we would sell ours, and Don had a property up Wakarara, and he sold that. Well, we hadn't sold it when we bid for the Munga Territory, actually. They were sold, both were sold, just not long
ago. Yeah, we had a bit of luck there, really. He reckoned that, most of us reckoned his would be the first to sell, but ours was, in actual fact. And, as I said, we went out there for 23
years. When we went out there, do you know the property?
No.
It's a huge, great big
10
house
out.
Built in 1896.
So, which road?
You know where the Bridge Club is? In
Farm
Mount
Road,
Mount?
Yes.
Well, yeah. It's out beyond that.
Okay. Oh, it's in Farm Road.
Mount Herbert Road.
Oh, yeah, oh,
yes, Mount
Herbert.
Yes,
we're
Mount
talking about different
road.
Places
yes.
now.
The house was a big old house, very solid and so forth. And Judy and Don's children were only little. And Judy said, I don't want to live in that great big house. So I said, well, what we'll do is you go in the cottage. There were three cottages, actually.
Yes.
You go in one of the cottages, and we'll go in the big house for 5 years. So it was just 5 years.
Yes.
We moved out of the big house, altered the cottage, and made a decent home of it. And they went into the homestead.
It's still in the family, the property?
No. Don leased it off us for our part of it for 10 years. And then they lost Hamish in the meantime, and they probably felt that they didn't have any future. And,
mm-hmm.
and so they actually bought us out, and they only had it for 3 years, and they sold. Sold for $9 million. So they did all right.
Yeah,
we did all right.
Almost gave it away. Gave it away for $9 million.
Big property, though.
Yes.
It's the story of life, though, isn't it?
Yes.
And it's always interesting. When I spent my last 25 years in real estate, so I sold farms and all sorts
yes.
of things. And it was interesting because there's only ever one buyer in a market. It's to find that person, and it's got the money.
Yep.
Well, there were
and
two of them, actually.
Yes. To get two is really
quite
yes.
special. But when it sold for that price, the market must have been very buoyant.
It was. Well, actually,
yes.
we missed the top market. Well, they missed the top market because prior to that, there were two or three farms round about Hawke's Bay that went for $15 million, and there was just a little drop in the bucket when we sold.
Now, is there anything that you've forgotten to tell me?
I think we've covered it fairly
well. Can you
well,
make
actually.
Any suggestions as to what it might be?
Well, no, see, that's the difficult thing. Now, just going back to your farm road and the
yes.
big station, they would all be top-dressed by plane, wouldn't they?
Yes.
Or was it
yes.
wheel tractor country?
Oh,
No, we didn't do any spreading whatever other than by air out there. The country runs up to a ridge or higher ground.
Yes.
And Nigel Giblin had the airstrip up there on the
yes.
ridge, and the super trucks used to climb, you know. And then, of course, the plane had a really easy job because all it had to do was just fly off, and it had its height immediately. And that's probably how we sold the property. I put on a fair bit of super, and I used to put on dicalcic also. And, you know, it really made the place bloom. I put
it
on
was the type of farm where Charlie never fed out hay.
Didn't you really?
No.
Good wintering
well,
country.
It was, and also it was early country because it was all facing the east.
No, they got a bit short occasionally, I can tell you.
Yeah.
But that's so. fortunately, we didn't strike that, at least we weren't farming during that period. I don't know, does the 61 drought come to your mind?
Yes, it does, yes.
Yes, okay. Well, we went out in 60, and I don't think it stopped raining from when we took over the place until about
September,
that's it. Mm. Till about the following September, and then the rain stopped like that, and it didn't rain for
till March.
At least 5 months.
We had the wettest winter we'd ever had, and then it dried out.
That's it?
And it dried,
yep.
And dried and dried.
And dried, exactly.
We went and bought an irrigation plant and
yes. Yes.
Water and...
Right.
Yes, I'll never forget that winter.
Yeah.
I can still see these tracks over the farm where we were
yes.
taking hay to the cows.
That's right.
Great deep ruts and
yes.
we thought, how the
yes.
hell will it ever come right again? But it did.
That's dead right too. Well, of course, as you know, it didn't rain and it didn't rain. And fortunately, we'd only just gone there. And of course, we hadn't started building up the stock. We only had 1,500 odd ewes, and at the latter part of it, we had about 2,600 ewes.
Well, we had another bad drought when we were there. What year would that have been? Do you remember? We opened the... Bruce had water.
Oh, yes.
Well, we had water and he had
yes,
feed.
Yes.
And we opened the two farms up and mixed.
We still must have had a certain amount of feed. That stage, of course, I'd been top dressing and getting a bit more guts into the
yes.
into the pasture. Yes, you're quite right. Bruce Alexander had the place next door. Yeah, that is travelling out, as it were.
Sure.
He was next door, and he ran out of tucker, and we've got short of water, so we combined and opened up the fence, the boundary, and somehow we managed to scratch through. But in farming, you know, you do get these periods.
Oh, absolutely.
But that was the toughest we ever had, was that 60-61 drought.
Well, dried out.
Yeah.
October,
yes.
The sun came out and it didn't go away.
That's right. The westerlies blew,
that's
do you
right.
remember?
Yep.
And they baked the soil.
Yes.
It just... you know, grass just refused to grow.
You mentioned earlier on how things have changed. I can remember there must have been about 6 stock agents in Waipuk. And the ewe fairs. Do you remember the ewe
yes.
fairs? The trucks would be going all night and all day and cutting them. And one year it was very wet and all these trucks were getting bogged.
Yes.
It was a different world when you think of all the stock and station agents. And all farmers had the stock and station agents checkbook. They all had a rep for looking after the stock, had someone looking after their crops and mercantile,
yes.
and they had fences, cowman gardener,
yeah.
and
right.
the boss was away at the polo or the races.
Yeah.
yeah.
And yet they weren't. Apart from the 50s, when we had the wool boom, farming has never been that profitable that it could support
no.
all those people. But today, there are
yes.
no stock.
No. They've
disappeared. No stock food.
Things
are.
Have certainly changed.
Yes.
And when you think back on our life, how things have changed
yes,
in
yes.
our life.
We've
right.
seen the good years, though.
Yes.
I think so.
And especially someone like Chaz, who went to war, people
yeah.
like myself never... experience that.
No.
That must have been difficult too.
Yeah. I did mention, didn't I? I was awarded the military medal for the operations in the last...
Driving this bridge out and ahead of the army so they could follow you across
yeah.
it.
You know, I hadn't seen a Sherman for some time, and we dropped in at Waiuru. There's a Sherman tank in the back. I went into it and I thought, holy smoke, surely I didn't drive a bloody thing like that.
Yes.
You know, it looked so big. But
out in the open and open country with lots of other vehicles.
Yes.
Nothing looks as big.
That's right.
Now, I did my military training at Linton and I was shortlisted to go to Vietnam. Pleased I didn't go to Vietnam because no one won there.
That's right.
No.
So anyway, well, look, I think we've probably pretty well covered most of your adventures, unless you think of something else.
That's very good of you. Thank you very much.
It's my pleasure to have come over.